Welcome back to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. Episode, what is this? Four? It's four, right? Yeah, it's episode
four.
We
made it. We've totally survived.
If you're watching this on YouTube, you're like, wait a minute, this is episode three. I'm just going to give you a hard truth. I totally messed up the audio on my side for episode three. The episode is out there on iTunes and Spotify and all the podcast places, but I was too shamed to put it on YouTube. So I might put it back on YouTube, depending, but the audio was pretty bad. I don't know.
You know, it's noticeably, like, not top quality, yeah. But, you know, cut yourself a break. It's not unlistenable. It's by far, it's totally still listenable.
Well, that's very sweet of
pristine.
You.
It's like chatting with somebody on the phone, basically.
Oh, I get that. That makes sense. So, episode four. It takes us only four episodes to figure out what the heck we're doing, so that's not too bad.
That's a solid win.
Yep. The Nintendo Newscast, back when we did that, I mean, we did nearly 50 episodes before we knew what we were doing, and I'm not even sure we knew what we were doing to any extent at that point, too. But episode four of the Nintendo Wirecast, I'm super excited. I am one of your hosts, Amiibo Jason. I am here once again with my main man, who is all the way in Taiwan, TJ. How's it going, man?
Glad to be here. It's going amazing. Super glad to be a part of this show with you, my good buddy.
So you guys don't know this because we don't record these live anymore. It is almost 9:30 p.m. CST. TJ, what time is it for you?
It's almost 10:30 a.m. in the morning.
Okay. It's a later Wirecast for us because I was too busy doing Ring Fit Adventure pretty much all night tonight.
I'm so jealous. Yeah, jealous of you.
This is my sixth straight day. I do it for a bare minimum of an hour a day. Today was about an hour and 30 minutes. It is more intense than I thought it would be. I don't even have the intensity all the way jacked up. It's close. I'm close to the top, but it just kicks your ass. Like it blows my mind how Nintendo has taken a simple resistance ring and turned it into a full-fledged RPG that makes you want to die at the end of the day. Die in a good way. In a very, very good way. But 6 days in, the workouts are getting slightly easier because I'm getting used to the motion. But the variety just keeps, you know, updating with the game. So as you progress, they throw in new workouts and new styles and new things you can do with this ring. And it's pretty darn impressive. I am shocked I'm saying this, but I would say that this is a better workout than I ever got with Wii Fit.
So excited to hear you say that because the game immediately interested me. Like, yeah. They had my attention, but I was also, conservatively skeptical. I was definitely going to buy in. They got my attention enough for me to want to play the game, but you know, I was keeping a healthy level of keeping my expectations in check. So to hear that it's not only fun, but it's also a really challenging workout is exactly what I needed to hear. So we talked about it last week, and I was really excited after the last podcast to go out and buy it because I'm a day ahead of everybody. And it turns out that the Hong Kong and Taiwanese version of the game actually don't release until October 31st.
That is such a bummer. Can you import it? I mean, it's almost October 31st anyway. So,
but there's another. I'm not sure about this because I can't read the page. I had one of my relatives out here read the page about trying to pre-order it and stuff. And there's a pre-order bonus. I think you get a pretty cool little workout bag or something.
Oh, nice.
And so I did have him pre-order it for me. He was nice enough to do. But when I talked to the people at the game store, let me just touch on this really quick. This was the first time that I've actually physically gone to the game store.
Sure.
And it turns out that it's a complete underground compound that's connected to the public transportation system. It's miles long, and there's nothing like it in America.
Yeah.
There are tons of video game stores. I saw at least 10, and they're all filled from floor to ceiling with Amiibo. It was gorgeous, a beautiful set, rare ones, and not even the same ones between the stores. And then they have like this dance setup where random people are just getting up and playing the game in the middle of public with bleachers set up and people are there watching. And there's like a Taiko drum set first switch. Oh, it was a phenomenal experience. You could go there just to be in that atmosphere of gaming. So I went to this place trying to track down Ring Fit Adventure.
Yeah.
And one of the game stores has somebody who speaks English, so that was very helpful.
That's a win.
And he told me that because of the language, only the Japanese and American versions released on the release date. What was it? The 18th.
Yeah.
On the 18th, and that they were like really promoting that this game is in Mandarin. So it's making me wonder if I have to play it in Mandarin, because I'm gonna have a different version of the game. So do you have like Chinese as a language option in yours?
No.
Ooh.
Not that I've seen. My Nintendo is typically very good about putting all the languages on one cart. I could be wrong. There's a good combination of spoken language in this game, like with the cutscenes. Like your ring is like a sentient ring. He talks to you throughout the entire game. The NPCs are more Breath of the Wild, where they go like, oh, 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 like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should do that for a living. I thought that was pretty good.
That was excellent.
Oh. And there's a lot of text, but there is a lot of spoken dialogue, so I am curious to see what Nintendo is going to do with it. I wouldn't be shocked if there is English on yours. I'd be pretty surprised if there's not.
I hope so, because I might be okay with the spoken parts, but I cannot read Chinese at all. So,
and you need it for sure. I mean, when I say this is an RPG, this is an RPG. This is kind of thing. I'm going to simplify it. There's a Pokemon element where some enemies have a certain color and you need to use a certain kind of workout. So if you see a yellow enemy, you need to use a leg workout. Or if you see a red enemy, you need to use an arm workout. There are certain things that you need to be able to kind of trigger. And there's buffs too, like certain health shakes that you can drink, like mid-battle, that will like buff you. It is an RPG in every respect. One of the reasons why my workout went long today is I messed up in one of the boss fights. I was 90% of the way through it, and I lost. And there's nothing worse than losing in a boss fight when you're 90% through, until you realize that you have to do the entire workout again. Like, I've been playing RPGs my entire life, and I never thought it could get worse than what happens when you lose to a boss until I played this game. Because I'm like, I dropped to my knees in a ball of sweat, and I'm like, I can't do this again. And you know that's a good game. You know that's when you have a game that is pushing you to your limits. So I really commend Nintendo for doing this. This is one of the cool things too. Nintendo actually sent us a review copy of this, so I'm playing the copy that Nintendo sent me. I'm going to be doing my full review. I'm going to start writing it tomorrow. I wanted to get 7 full days of workouts in before I started to write my review. But spoiler, I like this game a lot. I really, really like this game.
So let me ask you, is it a linear story progression? Like, is it possible to beat it, or did they have some kind of mechanic where you can continue the workout beyond the scope of the story?
I would kind of consider it like an open world RPG to a certain degree, where there are side quests and many things that you can do besides like taking on the big dragon dude. So kind of a quick story of what this is. This dragon used to be super weak, and he used to be the original owner of this ring, this sentient ring. He got picked on, and he decided to just work out, and that's all he did, and that's all he started to care about, and he got mad swole. And for some reason, some dark force took him over, and now he is using workouts negatively instead of positively. So you have to put him in his place, which is kind of fun. There are many things you can do. You can either, you could go straight to, you could go through the linear path and straight to the dragon. Or you can go to the townsfolk and you can talk to them, do side quests and many things. You can collect coins, which you can kind of turn into new outfits that you can wear. There's different workout clothes you get that strengthen your defense, that give you higher attack power. I mean, it's an RPG. It's a simplified RPG that makes you sweat. And I think that's amazing.
I do too. Now, you've indicated that your level of fitness does impact your ability to progress in the game, which I think is awesome. But let's say we have an Olympic caliber athlete.
Yeah.
Could they just beeline to the end and win?
No. So number one, there are certain things that you can do to increase or decrease the difficulty. And by increase or decrease, it's just how many reps of something do you need to do to take out an enemy. I'm at a pretty high level right now, and to take out, I'd say maybe a quarter of a mid-level enemy, not even a boss, it would take between 40 to 80 moves. So that's maybe 40 crunches or 40 leg lifts, or they have these things that like you just squeeze the ring and it does like a chest exercise. The worst one and the best one is the bow pull. So you treat the ring like a bow and arrow, and you have to hold it in place for about 10 seconds and then let go and do that about 30 or 40 times. And your arms just feel it. Whatever this ring is made out of, it is just, it's not forgiving at all. Really good.
But it gives you the sense that it's pretty durable.
Oh yeah, for sure. I've never gotten to a point where I felt like I was going to break this thing ever. Maybe you, not everybody's Superman. So,
well, let me ask you, if you were my personal trainer,
yeah,
what difficulty level would you recommend for me on this game? Like, should I try to max it out off the bat?
I wouldn't try to max it out, because that just means you're going to be doing more reps. Like, do you want to sit there and do like 500 moves to beat a boss? Like, sit there for an hour and a half and take on an enemy? I'd probably say no. Maybe you do.
So really, it does increase the number of reps that you have, but it doesn't necessarily increase the difficulty of the exercise. It just makes you have to do more.
Everybody gets the same exercise. Okay. And the ring doesn't get like stronger. I mean, it's just an elastic ring. It's not elastic. It's made out of some like carbon fiber. I have no clue. But I did up the difficulty a bit today, and I noticed like for the bow thing, it went from me having to do 36 to 46 when I went up like three.
So if I put it at max, what it would just basically mean is I would have to perform more reps.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So I think that's, for the most part, not necessary. I feel it very quickly. I'm sure you'd feel it less quickly. I am not in TJ shape right now. I don't think I've ever been in TJ shape in my life.
Well, you have a 2-week head start. You're going to be in better shape than me by the time I even get my hands on this ring. I have many times, like, I picture myself now like this Frenchman stranded in the middle of the ocean on just the shipwrecked, what I can gather from my wrecked ship.
Yeah.
Just keeping this log to myself. Day 7. Still no sign of the ring fit adventure. Hopefully one day I will be able to experience the exercises. My muscles are starting to atrophy. Day 10, no ring adventure in sight.
And so I think you're going to be okay. I think you're going to be fine. That was a pretty good Frenchman, by the way.
I just found out that I'm French.
Really? Like, no joke?
Yeah, no joke. And then instantly the accent came. Beautiful. No, I'm just kidding. I spent my whole life thinking that I was Irish, Polish, and Italian.
Yeah.
And then my grandmother just did Ancestry.com, and apparently there was this big scandal that nobody in the family knew about. And so my grandmother's half French, which means I'm a lot more French than I thought I was.
Wow. Half French. That's a lot of French.
Yeah. Yeah. And I now think that I'm related to Joan of Arc.
Really? You never know.
It would be super awesome.
But I'm going to go ahead and just give it the two thumbs up. I mean, my full review is going to come out in the next, I'd say, week or so. I'm going to shoot some videos. I'm going to embarrass myself on video playing this thing. You do not look flattering when you play this game. There's a lot of moves where there's one that I have to hump the floor. I mean, I don't know how else I can put this. I mean, they're planks.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got to like put your butt in the air and then kind of put it down and then back up and then down.
Yeah, man. That's part of the fun of these games, really, is not being self-conscious about it, having no ego and embracing it not only for the physical benefits of getting a good workout, but also because it is funny to watch other people do that.
I just want to say that anybody listening to this that is on the fence about it, that's maybe embarrassed or hasn't really worked out before, this is bringing me back to when I started Wii Fit. And I started Wii Fit as a 210-pound dude, obese BMI, completely like not where I should have been in my life. And Wii Fit changed all of that. And now I'm on day 6 of Ring Fit, and I'm getting the same feelings I had before. Granted, I'm not 210 or anything right now, but I'm getting that same kind of emotion and feeling that I had initially. And Nintendo knows how to take something and make it fun, make it entertaining, and make you just want to come back every day and do what you're supposed to do. So if you're on the fence and you want to make maybe a change in your life or just be healthy, this is really a really neat way to do that. So once again, 2 thumbs up, full review coming soon.
That's awesome, man. Now, while I was not able to get Ring Fit Adventure, I did finally manage to track down that purple and orange Joy-Con.
Nice. They, you got those?
It had like a nebulous release date out here, but when I was in the glorious kingdom of video games, they were everywhere.
So I think I see them behind you. I see the orange one.
Yeah. My daughter now has her purple and pink set. So
she's
very excited about video games. She was on a minor video game strike until she could complete the purple and pink collection.
Wow. So what is she playing now?
She's still in the Goose game. You really got us hooked on that. So good. All my kids are really, they just love antagonizing people as the Goose.
Everybody needs to play Goose game at some point.
They do.
It's mandatory.
And you know what I was thinking about that game? It's one of the few games where there's really, you can't die.
Yeah.
And you can't like kill anybody else. You're being a pest. You're being a nuisance. Yeah. But by and large, the game really just consists of figuring out how to unlock more paths. It's very clever how it's set up.
Yeah.
And in the worst case scenario, you make a mess that is too bad for you to be able to progress anymore, and then you just reset where everything is. But all of your progress is maintained. So the way that game is set up is super interesting. I'd really like to see if more games could come up with a similar approach to progressing the game.
Oh, they're going to. I mean, I think Goose Game has opened the floodgates for this type of game. Simplistic, no like gigantic story elements. I think we're going to see people attempting to emulate the success of this game very, very quickly. I think I'm more excited for the official follow-up to this game, which you know is coming. I think once they made $10 million on this Goose Game, that it's definitely in the cards. But
there were so many unused assets that went, by the time the game was done, I had to look it up to see what if there was anything I had missed.
Yeah.
But there are some things that are in there that you can interact with that seem so like all of the things that you do actually have to do that I was surprised that there was nothing with it as far as completing your objectives is concerned. So I wouldn't be surprised if they added DLC. A few more things. Yeah, let's get some juicy goosey DLC in there.
There you go. So you got your Joy-Con. I do have some updates on my collection. So if you don't know this, I'm in the process of essentially compiling a complete North American Nintendo 64 collection. I am incredibly close. I'm going to shift the camera real quick. So that's the collection right now. I'm going to try to, there we go.
Ooh, that's handsome. That's a handsome looking set right there.
So I actually, my favorite thing in there right now is that Conker stuffed animal that was a birthday gift from my mother-in-law. That thing is just amazing. I'm a massive Conker fan. I'm a massive Rareware fan. But this weekend, I ended up picking up 6 new games for the collection, which brings my total down to 22 to complete this bad boy. So I have most of the rare ones. So I have games like Bomberman 2. I have Clay Fighter Sculptor's Cut, which is the rarest game on the system. I am missing 2 rare games, but a lot of the other stuff that I'm missing, it's pretty common stuff. So I'm very close.
What are the most rare that you don't have yet?
The rarest I don't have are 2 pretty crappy games. They were Blockbuster exclusive games like Sculptor's Cut was. One is called Stunt Racer.
And oh, Stunt Racer FX?
No, it's not FX. FX was for Super Nintendo.
Oh, I'm going to get torn apart by people in the comments.
So Stunt Racer 64 is, different game, Blockbuster exclusive. It's pretty, mediocre.
Is it the same franchise?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I might be wrong. Now I'm going to get destroyed in the comments section, so we'll be in good company. And the other game is called Super Bowling. It is a bowling game, and it is a very, very average bowling game. There are better bowling games on the Nintendo 64, but this one is the second rarest game on the console. It's about $310 for a slightly worn copy. For like a mint condition copy, no box, about $350. With the box and manual, it's about $800.
So if I understand correctly, these games were never available for retail. They were exclusive for renting from Blockbuster?
Correct.
Oh, so really, the only way you could possibly get one is anything that was left over from the Blockbuster collection.
There are quite a few. Like, a lot of these games, they're not super rare. They're not as rare as you would imagine they are. Sculptor's Cut is the rarest of the rare, but there's always one available on eBay at any time. So it's not like it's like Nintendo World Championships rare. There are hundreds of copies out in the wild. The same with Super Bowling, and the same with Stunt Racer, but I'm close. I think for Stunt Racer and Super Bowling, it's going to be, I don't know, maybe a year before I pull the trigger. I'm still hoping to pick them up like at a rummage sale. I know that that's probably not going to happen, but who knows? But I'm like $600 away from completing the entire set.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It feels good.
Now, you mentioned that you're also getting into collecting for another console.
Yeah, yeah.
Nintendo related.
So I talked to you about this before the podcast, but I'm getting really into collecting for Sega Dreamcast. Dreamcast is, this is tough. It might be my favorite home console ever. And
wow,
I know that's
really,
that might be blasphemy.
It's shocking to me.
It's surprising because I was into gaming when I was a kid with Ocarina of Time and Mario 64. I grew up playing the NES. But when the Dreamcast came out, it was 1999. I was 14 when it came out, and I got it on day one, played House of the Dead, Sonic Adventure, a game called Seaman where you talk to a fish. It kind of molded my awkward teen years. So it came out at the perfect time. Like at 14 years old, like I was gaming pretty regularly. I you know, played the Game Boy Color a lot too. Game Boy Advance, I think at that point too. But the Dreamcast was just this amazing, like, just experience for me. I loved everything about it. I liked the VMUs. And I don't feel too bad saying that right now because Sega and Nintendo are pretty much just two peas in a pod at this point. But it's really fun to collect for this console. I'm playing games like Crazy Taxi with my daughter. She loves it. She's playing it too. We just beat the game that I mentioned before called Seaman. Again, this game where you're talking to a fish with a humanoid face. It is the strangest game you'd ever imagine. Hey You Pikachu, except if Pikachu can mock you and make fun of you and ask you very personal questions about your religion and your sex life. I mean, I'm not joking. This is all 100% true. It is a bizarre game. And wow, the Dreamcast, they're chock full of weird games like that. Jet Grind Radio, this game where you are on rollerblades and you're graffitiing around like this like weird, like futuristic version of Tokyo. It is such a fun game. So there's so many really cool hidden gems on the Dreamcast. So I'm really getting into collecting that right now.
I worked at Toys R Us during the time when Dreamcast was a little bit after when it launched and all the way up until it was discontinued. And I got to see in the R Zone the side-by-side comparison of all of the games and the releases. And you'd look at titles and it was clear that of that generation, the Dreamcast was by far the most advanced out of all of those.
It was just such bad timing. It was the worst timing on their part.
And yet that seems to be the case with Sega's consoles in every situation with the exception of the Genesis, where they were always just a little bit too ahead of the curve, that they didn't quite have their thumb on the pulse of the gaming culture. And even though what they made was impressive, it just never really caught on enough for it to be commercially viable.
It's like the Saturn. When the Saturn came out, they rushed the Saturn. I don't know if you know this. You might know this because you worked at a game store. Like stores like KB Toy Stores, they boycotted the Saturn. So Sega just, they what did they call it? They shadow dropped the Sega Saturn. Like, at this live event, they got on stage, and they're like, here is the Sega Saturn and all these new games, and guess what? It's available right now. And a lot of toy stores weren't part of this, like, shadow drop. So they said, you know what? We're never carrying this console, ever. You know, screw you, Sega. So that's one of the reasons why the Sega Saturn just didn't take off right away. And then number two, the PlayStation and N64 hit the scene and destroyed everything that the Saturn tried to do. But when the Dreamcast came out, the PlayStation 2 was less than a year away. I think the PlayStation 2 came out mid-2000, and the Sega Dreamcast came out $99.99. So they were the big dog on campus for all of 6 months. I mean, we live in an age right now where graphics obviously don't matter nearly as much as they used to, but for any kids listening to this that kind of see what things are like right now, back then, graphics were king. Like, if you had the best graphics, you had one of the best systems. It's just the way it was. I think that's why the N64, the Xbox, and the PlayStation 2 were so similar in terms of, like, graphics, even though I think the GameCube looked the best, in my humble opinion. But
well, it was the most obvious way to demonstrate progress at the time.
Yeah.
Where you look at moving from 8-bit to 16-bit, and then from 16-bit to 64-bit. Like, these things were just so instantaneously recognizable when you look at the comparisons, that to market it based on the visuals was a really, really enticing route to go. But now you could basically do photorealistic. So what is the next graphical move? There is no next graphical move. 3D, there's really VR. Like real 3D, VR. And since you can't really show VR unless you're in VR, there's Nintendo experimented with glassesless 3D, and I would say it was reasonably successful.
Yeah.
VR is doing well enough. I don't really know that it'll ever overtake regular gaming, just looking at a screen.
Not yet. Not yet.
You have to pretty much eliminate all the equipment, I think. If you can find somebody to do VR.
We're getting very close to that. Like, with the Oculus, not the Rift. I have this. The Quest, the Oculus Quest. No sensors, no wires. You put it on, you take the wireless controllers, and that's it. You don't need anything. And then
that's cool.
They have an update coming out next year where you can get rid of the controllers, and they're going to map your fingers in real time.
Like, oh, wow.
It's just the headset, so everything is self-contained. I think we're getting there with VR, but from a graphics perspective, nobody really cares nearly as much. Maybe the PlayStation 4, like the pro crowd, they're really into that, but when the best game on the market right now is about a goose that is terrorizing faceless people.
Yeah. Well, it's less about what the graphic capabilities are and more about the art direction, which I love, because now it's a choice. If you want to make a game like Shovel Knight, where you're deliberately using an 8-bit style, it's really more like 12-bit, I think, but you're trying to evoke a certain feeling.
Yeah.
And it's a deliberate choice, because if they wanted to make Shovel Knight look super crisp and 3D graphics like any other game, they absolutely have the technological capabilities to do it. Breath of the Wild is this cel-shaded successor to Wind Waker, but if they wanted to make it super gritty, photorealistic like Skyrim, they certainly could. I love that art is what's shaping it now instead of technical limitations.
And don't get me wrong, I mean, I like, there's certain things like The Last of Us Part II, when that comes out, I'm all about that. Final Fantasy VII Remake, my God, I can't wait. But there are certain things that just don't matter to me nearly as much anymore, and the most powerful is not the best anymore whatsoever. Yeah. The Switch has proven that. The Switch is, in my opinion, the most fun console on the market, bar none. And I'm happy that people are coming around to that fact. I'm glad that video games are fun first and impressive second. And it took us a while to get back to that point.
So how far along is your Dreamcast collection?
Not very. So I have all of my favorites. So Shenmue's a pretty interesting, like, I struggle calling it an RPG, but it's kind of an RPG to a certain degree. It was a very ambitious game when it came out. Games like Jet Grind Radio, I have both Crazy Taxis, both Sonic Adventures, both Tony Hawk's. The best Tony Hawk's, by the way, are on Dreamcast, just bar none. So all of the games I wanted to get, I have. I'm getting to the point now where if I see a Dreamcast game for cheap, like a flea market or a garage sale, and I don't have it, I'll pick it up and I'll add it to the collection. I'm not ready to go after the expensive ones yet. I'm not thinking I'm going to get like a complete collection of this. So I do want a complete collection of Virtual Boy, which I'm about halfway there, and it's not hard to get halfway there, by the way. But for Dreamcast, not so much.
Do you feel like this is your collector instincts starting to lay out the field for the eventuality of you completing your Nintendo 64 collection? Oh, yeah. You need it.
I mean, I'm months away from finishing this. I could go on eBay tonight and just finish it if I wanted to, which I don't want to. The easy to find ones, there are some games that I need that are $5 or $6 a piece. I want to find them. I want to just have that excitement of seeing them like at a garage sale or Half Price Books or whatever. So I'm hoping to find at least some of these things in the wild still. I do know I'm going to have to go to eBay for some of those super high dollar ones at some point. But I'm not ready to do it yet. I'm not ready to give up like the challenge of it, if that makes sense.
Amiibo Jason is a hunter in the truest sense.
Thank you. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but my dream Saturday morning is I wake up early, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock. It's not really that early. I get ready. I go to the flea market, sometimes with my daughter who hates the flea market. And I hunt for video games. Sometimes I find games that I can trade for other games that I want. Sometimes I find the games I'm looking for. I mean, it's fun. It's a treasure hunt in its truest form. And that's why I got into like Amiibo collecting back in the day.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near as fun anymore, Amiibo collecting. It's click the button, get the package, unbox it, and that's it. I mean, the Toys R Us days were the best, but...
Totally.
We'll get into
that. I would
that.
Walk into Toys R Us, even if I had a complete collection of Amiibo, there were times where I would just take my kids through Toys R Us just because I was so interested in seeing the collective state of Amiibo. I just wanted to know what was there, what it was like, and that was fun to me.
God, I miss it. I really miss it. It's amazing how much I miss it, but it might come back one day.
I had that brief nostalgic feeling of what that was like walking through this underground mall, because every store had a completely different array of Amiibo that I've never seen on the shelf because they weren't released that way in the States. So there was like Skyward Sword Link just sitting there on the shelf, and he was an Amazon exclusive, I believe. And so I've never seen him on a shelf because I don't know that he's ever gone on a shelf.
Yeah, he's pretty
and
cheap now.
They had Zelda, Toon Zelda in the single box. In America, she was released in the two-pack, although she did actually make it in a single pack at some point later as a reissue, didn't she?
In Japan, never in the U.S. In the U.S., Toon Link was re-released in the single pack, but not Toon Zelda.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
I think it was a Nintendo New York exclusive for like a couple weeks. It was a weird, weird thing. It was back in the day when you had no idea what Amiibo would show up where.
Yeah.
But it's very, very different now.
So do you want to get into the state of Amiibo, or do you want to...
You know, I feel like this is the best transition for us to get into the state of Amiibo. I was going to save that to last, but this is kind of the perfect time to talk about it. TJ and I were discussing pre-podcast about a segment we want to do at least once a month called The State of Amiibo. Number one, Nintendo Wire started as Amiibo News. It was an Amiibo-only news site. And I feel like going back to our roots on collecting Amiibo, you just came out with a brand new episode of Custom Conquest today, which was amazing. I watched it live.
Thank you.
It was so good.
Thank you.
We have to talk about where we are with Amiibo. And right now, in my opinion, I would say the state of Amiibo is mixed. It is not dead yet. We have new Amiibo coming out next month. We have Shovel Knight Amiibo coming out in December, a gold Shovel Knight Amiibo coming out, and we just got a Link's Awakening Amiibo, which I was not expecting. I was very happy to see it, but most games Nintendo is putting out are Amiibo-less. Luigi's Mansion, no Amiibo. Mario Maker 2, no Amiibo. I mean, Animal Crossing hasn't been confirmed, no Amiibo. I would hope to God there is some sort of Amiibo functionality for the 600 cards I have.
I don't know if this is confirmed or if it's just a rumor, but I did hear a rumor that all cards are compatible with it. This could wind up to not be true,
yeah,
because I don't know that it's a confirmed thing, but that was something that I stumbled upon during my internet searches.
I should be able to say that that's not confirmed yet. We did a pretty big retrospective on everything, and that should have came on the list, but hopefully it is a very good rumor, because number one, the amount of amiibo cards that are out there that are dying to be used are high, too high. Right now for me, I mean, they're sitting in a closet and I want to be able to take them out and actually do something with them. And you can't see behind me, but happily Candied has the Animal Crossing amiibo display above her desk, and all of those are begging to be used too. So I'm really hoping that there's some, I don't know, some legs to that rumor.
Well, I think that you definitely mentioned the most significant situation with amiibo now, which is the tonal shift. They used to be advertised as, this is a way to enhance your gaming experience. Yeah. You get this cool little collectible thing. They're cross-game, cross-franchise, and they deepen the play experience. But now they're really underplaying the inclusion in games. And it's just like, here's a cool Nintendo collectible that you can use on your Wii U and a select few games on the Switch.
Yeah.
But just as Amiibo first launched with pretty good functionality in Smash Brothers, I would say that's one of the most fun implementations. It's probably my favorite implementation outside of Wolf Link, which is just an unbelievably awesome amiibo in Breath of the Wild. And that's still the current state of amiibo functionality, is you can use all of your amiibo from Smash Brothers in Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So as long as that keeps going, as long as they keep making Smash characters, I think amiibo are safe. I don't think we have to worry about this line ending anytime before they finally close shop on Smash Brothers Ultimate.
Yeah.
But just like you, I was also really surprised and delighted that Link's Awakening received an amiibo, but the functionality of it was just minorly tacked on. I like it, but it doesn't really seem like it added anything significant. All of the other amiibo that you can scan in don't really do much. They just give you little pieces that you can use in Dompei's Dungeon Maker, pseudo Dungeon Maker, Dungeon Rearranger, more like. But they... I don't really see there being a time, again, where amiibo are going to be a primary function, a primary feature in a game.
Those days are gone. That being said, I'm sort of nervous that we haven't seen any DLC Fighter Pass amiibo confirmed yet. No Joker. Obviously, no Banjo-Kazooie. I mean, that was just announced.
I am in no way concerned. I'm not at all worried. I'm like totally sure it's happening.
You would hope it's happening, right?
I'm totally sure. I don't even have the slightest shadow of a doubt.
My fear is Nintendo could say, listen, we're going to release something where you can take a Mii fighter and put in any of these DLC fighters into that.
That would be crazy if they did something like that. They would have to re-release the Mii Fighter.
Do I think it's going to happen? No. Am I concerned it's going to happen? I'm concerned that Joker has been out for this long and we've had nothing about a Joker amiibo. We've had nothing about a timeline for these. We're getting to the end of every fighter that's not a DLC fighter. I mean, everyone has been confirmed at this point. The only ones that haven't... Oh, go ahead.
Which is why that's not concerning, because they still had cast members that have not been made who are part of the base roster. So you wouldn't expect that the DLC characters would have priority over any of the characters that began in the game. So we are just now starting to get to that point. This is where I think you're going with that, where they're going to have to start announcing the DLC fighters because they've essentially run out of the base roster to make any more amiibo of.
So there's a rumor we're getting a Nintendo Direct in November, which I sure hope we do.
I'm sure we will. We typically do, don't we?
Yeah.
There's always at least one before the end of the year heading into the holiday.
If we don't hear anything during that Direct, I will start to worry a bit more. I want to see that Joker amiibo. I want to see that four-pack of Hero. Oh, my God. The four-pack of Hero amiibo.
The four-pack of Hero would be... I really, really hope that they go that route, because... For anybody who did see my Robin Custom Conquest episode. It took me a long time to make that Robin because I really badly wanted it.
Yeah.
But I did not want to make it. And I have a very similar attitude about these heroes where I will have all four heroes.
And can you make me an Edric? Can you please make me an Edric?
I hope I don't have to.
I'd rather have your Edric, to be honest. You make better. You'd make a better looking Edric than the real Edric.
No way.
Oh,
no
you totally way. Would.
I do aim to come as close to the standard of an official amiibo as I can, but I'm not blind to the fact that right. I do still fall short.
You're being modest, but okay.
If it comes down to it, and I have to make those, I will do what must be done for the sake of completion, a complete collection. The greater good. But no part of me is excited about the prospect of making those. Some amiibo, I'm like, I can't wait to do it. I just badly want to do it. And the conceptualization process excites me, planning it out, finding the pieces, putting it together. I enjoy it as an art project. But some, I'm like, all right, I'm going to begrudgingly do this because I want this amiibo, but I'm not going to enjoy it.
So I gotta grab something real quick off my shelf. So you had your episode of Custom Conquest today. I don't think I've ever shown this off on camera before. Let me put this back in. This is my custom amiibo of Banjo-Kazooie. I couldn't wait, so I took a Game & Watch base, and I just super glued a Totaku Banjo-Kazooie figure on there, and got it. You know, I finally have a Banjo-Kazooie amiibo.
It's glorious.
Thank you.
It's glorious.
It's not the hours and hours that you took to put yours together, but I'm pretty proud of it. But I think you and I are both on the same page where I don't think amiibo are dead yet, which is good. I thought amiibo were getting to that point until they announced that the Link's Awakening amiibo was coming out. That came out of nowhere. I thought for sure that the Smash line was going to be the end of it. But I still have hope that maybe for Metroid Prime 4 we could get a new Samus amiibo. We could get a new series in Animal Crossing. I hope to God we get a new series for Breath of the Wild 2. A new Zelda, like in that, I don't know, that hood she was in the trailer. I'd take that. A dehydrated Ganon amiibo. Yeah, give me that. I'll take that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things that I think would sell very well. But I'm still under the impression that the Smash series could be it.
I think so, too. I can't imagine what is still out there. You mentioned a few games, but I can't imagine one of those that would also coincide with an amiibo release if some of the ones that have already come out didn't. So Mario Maker 2, it was such a no-brainer. You just give us that Mario Maker amiibo that we've never seen. You could even make it a pack-in with the game for the physical release like they did with Mario Party. And then give us that Luigi one also. I would love those two amiibo. I'm going to make those at some point.
Yeah.
But I can't believe Nintendo didn't. And I'm sure that it's because they wanted to forego the amiibo functionality with the game, so it wouldn't have made sense. But they certainly could have. And then Luigi's Mansion 2, how obvious is a Gooigi?
Yeah.
If they don't make a Gooigi amiibo for this game, then I can't see Samus getting one. I can't see there being any new Metroid ones. I can't see Animal Crossing getting any more, given that out of all of the amiibo that Nintendo has ever made, Animal Crossing is the only one that I would say was a complete commercial failure. They were great looking amiibo, but they just decorated the shelves of stores for a long time until they got discounted super cheap. And then even still, they had a hard time moving them. I wasn't going to collect the Animal Crossing ones. And then once I started getting it for $2.50 a piece off of Amazon, I was like, all right, I'm going to get them for this.
I mean, it is a crime that we have only two Luigi amiibo out of every amiibo we have.
I have about seven Luigi amiibo.
Well, you have seven, but of the same two. I mean, what, we have 13 or 14 Links now?
Quite a few.
We have more Marios than I can count. I mean, not that many, but we have a lot of Marios. We could have had a Luigi with a Poltergust. I mean, it made sense. A Gooigi,
I have
makes
one of those.
Sense. An EGAD makes sense. I mean, there's so many cool amiibo. I think the biggest issue, not issue, I think the biggest thing that might be affecting my judgment on this is it a possibility that I'm so in my bubble as the editor-in-chief and creator of Amiibo News that I surround myself with a community of people that are so obsessed with Amiibo like I am, that maybe I just falsely assume that Amiibo are still as popular as they used to be. I mean, obviously, people aren't going insane anymore, but when I put, like, an in-stock alert out for a new wave, I get hundreds of retweets, people go crazy, and a lot of people buy them, and I'm not seeing a major decrease in that. But that just might be from my core community of people. So maybe if I step outside of this bubble that I'm in with Amiibo, I'll get a better idea of where they really are on people's minds. So if you're listening to this or watching this and you have an opinion on Amiibo, maybe you don't necessarily like, maybe you did like them, you don't like them anymore, let me know down below. I'm honest to God curious if maybe I'm just living in this bubble where everybody still loves Amiibo. Because everybody I talk to, every Nintendo fan I talk to, still wants to collect these Amiibo.
You and I talked about this before the relaunch of Custom Conquest, where you'd actually kind of been encouraging me for a while. You're like, hey, I'm sick of seeing videos with bring Custom Conquest back. Are you ever going to bring Custom Conquest back?
Yeah.
And my response to you on a number of occasions was, I just don't really think Amiibo have the same, there's not the same public fervor for it that there used to be. There's not this collective interest in it like there once was.
Yeah.
And even towards the end of the original series, it started to kind of peter off. And I just started to feel like maybe I was hanging on to something because I loved it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really talking to the same community of people anymore. And then when I finally did, just for personal reasons, decide I wanted to get Custom Conquest back, I was shocked at the number of people who shared in my excitement.
Yeah,
who,
I mean that
who tuned into the show.
That Luigi Daisy video, I think, is past 100,000 now.
I can't believe that. I really can't. I'm actually in the opposite position that you are, where even though I love Amiibo, I look around me and there's not really too many people I see who even know what they are. Anytime somebody asks me what I do and what these things are, have you ever heard of Amiibo? They're like, no, what's that? So I'm aware of the fact that you have to be part of the in crowd to really even know what Amiibo is. But that in crowd must be pretty big. Like there's still, even though it's not, it doesn't have its roots into all aspects of society and not many people outside of, I wouldn't even say the gaming culture, because there's a lot of gamers that don't even know what Amiibo are.
Yeah.
But within the Nintendo community, it's a pretty large fan base still. So who knows how far this will go? I'm really excited to see, and I hope people do take you up on your invitation to leave comments about it regarding this in the comment section, because I'm curious to know what other people's perspective is on this also.
So before we end this segment on this, I want two things from you. Thing number one, where do you see the state of Amiibo in two words?
Or less. Okay. That doesn't count. No, okay. All right. If I had to pick two words, I'd say, oh man, Jason, you put me on the spot here and my brain is not functioning. Why don't you go first? What's your two words for the state of Amiibo?
I would say my two words for the state of Amiibo are, you know what? I'm going to give you three because I got three. Clinging to life.
Clinging to life. I'm going to say impressive, because I do think that we're at the highest quality of Amiibo that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I'm going to say stable, because I think that they're financially soluble still. And I'm going to say declining.
Yeah.
Because even though I think they're worth Nintendo's while as it is, it seems like they're starting to slowly pull away. We've seen it far more, obviously, with, as we mentioned before, functionality in games. They're just not utilizing them anymore outside of Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And then the odd other title here. But are we going to see another odd title? Link sells well. Link has historically been the best-selling Amiibo that there is. I think that if they made another series similar to Breath of the Wild and they included functionality similar to how they did in Breath of the Wild in its upcoming sequel, I think that they could sell a lot. And hopefully that will be enough for them to be like, hey, here's wave two of the Breath of the Wild Amiibo. Yeah. I'd be over the moon if we got something like that. But I don't know how well the champions sold. I know the original ones, they could not keep them on the shelf for a while. And a lot of that was just bad timing. But I think if we were to see any more amiibo from here on out, it's probably going to be related to Zelda, since that's where the signs have been pointing. Obviously, Smash is going to finish, I think.
Yeah.
But outside of that, if it's not a Zelda-related amiibo, I'd be surprised. I'm curious to see what other franchise they could go with if they've already skipped Mario twice, with if you count Luigi's Mansion.
I still think variance and scarcity were the things that could have kept this the hype train going a little bit more. Very similar to what Skylanders did, even though that's a terrible example because Skylanders crashed and burned near the end. But you could occasionally run across like this different colored Skylander like figure. Like you could go to Toys R Us and just randomly stumble upon it. If they did that with amiibo, I mean, it would be gloves off. I'd be tackling old ladies and, like, beating up kids. I mean, not... that wouldn't.
Don't
really
pretend that
kids
you haven't already had to do that to get some of these super rare exclusives that they had before, like Rosalina and Bowser Jr.
So Rosalina,
Shulk, Ness.
Rosalina was easy because there was a blizzard when that stupid amiibo came out, and I was the only one stupid enough to go out to Target and get it.
Well, sure, in the Midwest. I was in L.A. at the time. I had to go to three different Targets, and I barely got one.
So, I mean, back in the day, it was pretty crazy, but it's clinging to life. So, for the time being, the state of amiibo is still alive, which is, I think, a positive thing. We're going to check back in a month. Hopefully, there'll be another Nintendo Direct that has happened at that point. We'll discuss it again. Perhaps I will increase that ranking. But it's still alive, and I'm pretty happy about that. I want to see it thrive again, though. I want to see it thrive.
Same here.
So before we go on the amiibo subject, so we just had an episode of Custom Conquest today. Do you have another episode in the works? And is there any hint about what we can expect?
It's a little scarier than most.
I'm digging most episodes
of Custom Conquest.
I'm digging that.
And I'm going to take a little bit of a different angle than I've taken in the past, where usually every episode is post-custom, where I'm detailing the process that I went through. This is going to, of course, have some of that, but I'm also going to try to involve the audience in the construction of a work in progress so that maybe viewers can also participate in helping me shape the final product.
I can dig that. That sounds fun. Even I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I have access to the channel and I have no idea what this is all going to be about. Cool. Before we go, I do want to just touch base on what you're currently playing, if you're playing anything. I mentioned before why I'm really excited for the Hero amiibo to come out. My guess is we're just going to get one, and it's probably going to be the Luminary from Dragon Quest XI. Now that I've played Dragon Quest XI for about 40 hours, that's what I'm playing right now, I cannot wait for that amiibo. I am over the moon with how good Dragon Quest XI is as a game. It is one of the best RPGs I've ever played. It is just fantastic on every level. What Square Enix was able to do, taking a PS4 Unreal Engine 4 RPG, moving it over to the Switch, and doing it in a way where you can barely notice a difference unless you're nitpicking, it's extraordinary, and the game is amazing. You need to pick it up. The voice acting, the comedy, just the RPG elements, everything about this game is top-notch. So if you're an RPG fan and you own a Nintendo Switch, you owe it to yourself to get this game. So that's all I'm going to say on that subject.
If I could use the ring to play this game,
then I
might be a little bit more sold on it. But I hate the inaction of turn-based games, which is
kind of...
I'm going to go on record, though, as saying I'm actually in the opposite camp with the Hero amiibo. I do think they're going to make all four.
I hope they do.
I think they are, because they did it with the Pokemon Trainer.
Yeah.
And while that's not in any way a guarantee of anything, and there have been more alternates that they have not made than they have, they made such a specific point of highlighting that this character can be all of these. In fact, he's down to the name. They should have called him the Luminary, but they didn't because they wanted the title to be representative of heroes from across the Dragon Quest series.
Yeah.
And so I think that they really want to highlight that point. And I think it's also a good point of negotiation with Square to say, hey, you're going to not only be able to profit share in the sale of just one amiibo, we're going to create four amiibo. And I think that might also be in some small part why they made two versions of Cloud, was because they knew that they could do two, and Cloud was Square also, so I think we're going to see all four.
I hope you're right. I mean, if I could pick one, it would be Edric. Number one, I think Edric is the most iconic of Dragon Quest. Dragon Quest III was my first Dragon Quest game, and everything about that character design, the costume, I mean, it's perfect, in my opinion. I want to see all four. If it's going to be one, it's going to be Edric. At least I'd like it to be Edric, even though if it's one, I think it's going to be Luminary, just for the tie-in with Dragon Quest XI S. But just my two cents.
I've been really spending most of my time this week trying to finish up Custom Conquest. Yeah. So any few minutes that I had to play, I kept going back to the same game. And it surprises me how much I'm playing this game, given what a poor first impression I had. I just cannot stop playing Mario Kart Tour. Yeah. I play it every day, not for long. Maybe I get like 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
Here and there, scattered throughout the day during downtime. But it's so super fast to get in, to get a race done, to try to achieve a few different challenges here and there. Now that I've changed my mental paradigm of how I approach the game, where I was trying to play it like a Mario Kart game, but I had to allow myself as a gamer to evolve to the experience of what this game is offering. And we talked about this at length in the last episode.
Yeah.
But being able to accept it for what it is and being able to try to approach it from the perspective of not necessarily trying to make my main objective getting first place, where getting first place is all that really matters when you're playing on any of the console iterations of the game. But in here, you have specific objectives that you need to complete, like hitting people five times with a banana within a single race. Yeah. I find myself not even caring what place I get. I'm just trying to align my bananas so that I can be making people slip on the peel.
Yeah.
And also, I think I'm going to really have to, I'm going to struggle to go back to having to press a button to steer, or I mean to accelerate.
Yeah.
Because whoever lets go of that button. I anytime I ever play Mario Kart, I'm depressing the accelerator nonstop from the whole time. So it seems like such an obvious thing just to have it always on. One big change, though, is I did finally bite the bullet on the gold pass.
Yeah.
I'm in the free trial. I actually did it yesterday. And there were enough incentives.
That's a good timing, by the way, because you got all the stuff from the last tour, right?
Yeah. That was why I did it. I was like, hey, this is pretty sweet. I'm going to be able to get all this stuff, and I'll be able to get all the stuff from the next tour, too. And the two things that have really sold me on this game is the constant infusion of new content.
Yeah.
And how long can they keep this going? Maybe forever. Like, if they can constantly keep adding courses. And it started to make me feel like, at first, while I was disgusted to the point of throwing up in my mouth at the idea of the gold pass.
Yeah.
And I'm in the free trial, so I don't have any, like, purchaser's guilt. But then I started to think, what if we've moved into the era of games as a service, where if they can continue to provide me with new content, can I justify continuing to supplement their development with a monetary incentive over an expanded period of time? If they were to make a Zelda like this, where they're like, hey, here's a Zelda game. You're going to be constantly infused with new dungeons, new missions, new side quests, and it's going to cost you $5 a month. I could not throw money at them faster. So
it depends on how they do it. Like, if it's the gacha system is still flawed.
I completely reject it. I have taken that out of the game. The gacha system doesn't exist in my game. And we talked about this, where I can't play it that way. I put all of my rubies into Coin Rush.
Yeah.
And I make myself as coin rich as I can possibly be, so that when a character, a car, or a glider appears in the shop, I have the coin to be able to purchase it, and then I'm excited. Like, I had Mario appear in the shop, and I had Bowser. I have every single Koopaling except for one of them, and I've gotten all of them in the shop. So it actually makes checking the shop a fun and exciting daily activity. I pretend the pipe isn't even there, because it is a recipe for disappointment. I have never had a decent pull out of the pipe, and you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning, winning the lottery, and getting bit by a Black Widow spider on the same day than you do of getting King Boo or of Pauline. So
I did get the Japanese version of Mario. I let my daughter pull the pipe, and I could hear, because if you get a good character in the pipe, it's like this longer like pipe animation and the music's different, and I can hear it. I'm like, what's that sound? And yeah, it was exciting, but at the same time too, I'm trying to avoid it, not just because my daughter's playing this too, and she constantly wants to pull the pipe. And I'm like, put the money or put the rubies into Coin Rush. You can get the stuff in the store. I don't want my daughter to get hooked on that. Yeah. Like it's gambling. I mean, it's gambling. It's you're not gambling for money, but you're gambling for Rosalina wearing a witch hat. Like,
and it's gambling with unbelievably horrible odds. Like if it was even like 1 in 10, I might be enticed to do it. But your chances of getting it are so remote that it is a complete turnoff to me. I'll wait, and these will eventually appear in the shop, I'm sure, down the line.
Or in the Gold Pass at some point. I mean, Peachette's in the Gold Pass this month. Dry Bowser was in it last month. Dry Bowser was in my shop at one point.
I did get Dry Bowser. So I got him as part of the Gold Pass, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I saw there's definitely like the top tier characters that show up in the shop randomly too. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting system. I'm not a major fan of it. However, I just spent like 50 rubies this morning thinking I could game the system, thinking I can get my King Boo. And I got like 4 baby Marios, 3 gliders that I already had. Out of the 10 pulls that I did today, I got 1 cart I didn't have. It was the most disappointing experience I ever had.
See, you're a litmus test for why that gacha mechanic in this game is such an unforgiving gimmick. It's just like a ruby sink, and for people who are spending money on this, it's a bottomless well. Like, you're never going to be able to exhaust it. But 2 things did happen for this game that I think made it more fun.
Yeah.
And as I have started to get more characters and more cars, it's opened up a lot of the game for me.
Yeah.
So I can now actually do more. Where at the beginning, they really did me wrong. Where they gave me only garbage characters, I got only garbage cars, and I had very few compatibilities. So I had a hard time really understanding the way that the game worked.
Yeah.
And I was having a hard time unlocking anything. But now that I have a reserve of coins, a decent roster of characters, cars, and gliders, and the ability to be able to perform some of the challenges.
Yeah.
Anytime I turn it on, there's something for me to do. One thing I will say is, last time I was talking about how I preferred playing at 100cc to 150 because it felt like I was capable of doing more of the challenges. I never played 200cc as of that point because it's exclusive to the Gold Pass.
Yeah.
Since getting the Gold Pass, I have played nothing but 200cc. 200cc is so fun. I never am not gliding. The only time I'm ever not gliding is when I'm switching direction.
Yeah.
But I love it. And that is going to be hard for me to say goodbye to. It's like the rhythm of my play style. The way that I like to play is at the perfect speed of 200.
So you're going to keep the Gold Pass?
I'm going to consider.
It sounds like you're going to keep the Gold Pass.
I think maybe I will keep the Gold Pass as long as I'm continuing to play the game. Because I'm playing it enough for it to be worth $5. And I'm playing it every day.
And I do like the mashups they do of the courses. Being able to play classic courses and having this massive twist of like jumps everywhere, like dinosaurs being added to it.
I love it.
Like Waluigi Pinball was added today, which is my favorite Mario Kart course, bar none ever. It is such a fun course. The design, everything about it. And they did such a good job recreating Waluigi Pinball for this game. And I'm really curious, as this tour goes on, what they're going to do to make that different. So I'm going to keep playing too. I'm in the same boat as you were, where I was dead against this game. I think it was the first podcast we talked about it. And now I find myself playing it about 15, 20 minutes a day, just having fun with it, unlocking characters, doing the challenges. It's Nintendo made a fun little game. And if you can get past the idea that you need these five-star characters, like, to have fun, you can have fun with this game. But yeah, if you are of the mindset that I need King Boo, both variations, I need Rosalina and a witch hat to have fun with this game, you are not going to have fun with this game.
Yeah. You just have to accept there's it. There's no way to leverage your skills to attain certain unlockables. That's the problem that I have with it. So I can't let that be a part of the game. If my abilities cannot in some way garner these rewards, then I need to focus on the things that I do have control over in the game, and yeah, that's trying to create as many coins as I can, try to unlock as many achievements as I can, and try to rank as high as I can on the what do they call those tour challenges? Like the special featured challenge.
Like the last one.
Yeah, that's super fun. I really am enjoying that part of it. So right now I'm at the very beginning of my 2-week trial. I'll see where I'm at towards the end of it. But I think as long as I'm still playing it daily, it's probably worth that $5 buy-in, because it does let me do more stuff when you start getting the gold rewards. But as I see my interest start to wane and I start petering off, then it probably will cease to have any value to me.
I'm curious to see what you guys, the listeners, think of this. If you're on YouTube, let us know in the comments below. If you're not, hit me up on Twitter. Hit TJ up on Twitter. We'll fill you in on where you can find us in just a moment. But let us know your thoughts on this, because I feel kind of dirty promoting it. But it's fun. I'm having a good time with it. And yes, you can change your mind on things. And I think we both did. So
yeah.
But I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. Before we head out, TJ, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on YouTube on the Nintendo Wire channel. Check out the latest episode of Custom Conquest. If you haven't, I would really appreciate it. Let me know what you think in the comments section. Fair warning, I spent about half the episode just talking about what brought me to the point where I was ready to make the custom. So if you like story time with TJ, there's a healthy dose of that. And then if you want to connect with me on Twitter, you can find me at Custom Conquest.
Awesome. And then if you're interested in anything that I do, obviously I'm right here on YouTube too. Hopefully, if you're watching this on YouTube. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter account is at AmiiboJason. We have Nintendo Wire's Twitter account, which is at NinWireAmiiboNews, at AmiiboNews, and of course at NintendoWire.com. And a quick side note, we are nearly at 96,000 subscribers on YouTube. I can't believe that we are this close to hitting that 100,000 milestone. So if you are a follower or a subscriber of the channel, thank you for everything you've done over the past 5 years. It's been one heck of a ride, and we're almost there. I'm thinking by the end of the year, by the end of 2019, we should be at 100,000. So once again, thank you for everything.
Yeah, and if you're one of those people who, you know, casually check out the content and haven't pulled the trigger on that subscribe yet, yeah, do it. Go for it.
You could be the 100,000th person.
You never know. You could do it. Everyone counts.
All right, guys, until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.